meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD subsequent procedures subteam track 3 string contention objections and disputes call on the 14th of November at 20 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. It's Jim Prendergast. I'm only on the phone.
Great. Thanks, Jim. We'll go ahead and note that. And I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking and keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. This is Robin Gross for the record. Let's quickly review our proposed agenda. So we've got our administrative stuff, the review statement of interests, and plenary update from the plenary co-chairs, and discussion of our proposed work plan now through March 18th to meet our deadlines. And then we'll dive into the substantive discussions for today, which continues on the topic of community applications, and in particular looking at the idea of creating categories of communities, and also reviewing the input we got, the community comment, too, on communities, beginning with Section 3.3 in the themes document. And then any other business, and then that's it. So we've got a pretty full agenda today. Is there anything anybody wanted to add into the any other business section or have any other questions or comments on the proposed agenda? Okay, well, I don't see or hear anyone on that, so let's go forward. Okay, so is there anyone who would like to update their statement of interest, their SOI? Now would be a good time to do that. Okay, I don't see or hear anyone on that, so let's go forward. And next would be our update from the plenary co-chairs. And it looks like we've got both Jeff Newman and Cheryl Langdonor on the line with us today. I'm not sure which one or wanted to address this. I see in the chat Jeff has typed he will defer to Cheryl. So Cheryl's been voluntold. Cheryl, you
know, I'm not sure, Jeff. Thanks very much, Robin. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. I'm not sure Jeff needs to defer to me at all, but anyway. Yesterday, well, sometime in the last 24 hours, we had our first full PDP working group call since the Abu Dhabi meeting in ICANN 60 in Abu Dhabi, and I think a number of you were on that call, but briefly some of the major items in addition to the usual updates and reviews of where each of the working tracks are going to be heading in the next couple of weeks, as well as a review of what was done during ICANN 60. We were pleased to see that the kickoff and beginnings of Work Track 5 is well underway, and to note that the Work Track 5 first meeting with their members, participants and observers will be in the following 24 hours from today's call, but also noting that the general opening for people to join that Work Track 5 still runs till November 20th. So it's a preemptive but necessarily needing to be held now call. In addition to that, we also reviewed the very aggressive, but it's working backwards from our deadlines, timeline for the work tracks. And we've also going to be looking forward to reviewing the various work track sublines, the particular time courses for what they want to do when to meet our March and April deadlines, and with that, I guess it's back to you, Robin, unless Jeff's got something to mention that I've missed.
Great. Thanks so much for that, Cheryl. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Cheryl while we've got her on the summary here? Okay, I don't see any, so I think we can move forward with the agenda. And the next is to discuss the proposed work plan for Work Team 3. Now through March 2018, so if we could get that slide up on the screen, that'd be terrific. As Cheryl just said, we're trying to map out our schedule for the next year or so in terms of how we're going to meet our final deadlines and then work backwards from that and figure out what we need to do in the interim in order to meet our final deadlines. So we've got our proposed work track 3 pathways path to the initial report on the screen here, which, as you can see, has us presenting or that has the presenting to the plenary all of the sub issues on March 9th, basically, and. We're still in our deliberations now. We'll be coalescing opinions between December and February, calling for objections on those coalesced opinions in January and February, refining our report based upon the feedback that we receive in early March, and then presenting it to the plenary March 9th. So that's our proposed work plan. Between now and then. Does anyone have any comments or any questions to this? Okay, I see Alan's got his hand up. Please, Alan, come in.
Thank you. My only comment is it's both aggressive and given that I suspect, based on discussions I've had with various people. There's a lot of people who care about some of these issues but are not actively involved in our working group. I think we have a real challenge to make sure we get all the right parties involved so we don't find objections coming out way later than our work group deliberations and presentation to the plenary. I don't know whether that's even possible, but I think we're going to have to be very proactive. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That's an important thought. And so if anyone's got any suggestions or ideas about how we can bring in some of these folks who might not be participating now but will have problems with what we come up with down the line, bring them forward because we do want to include as many as possible now is to have much, you know, smoother finalization of the report later. Anyone else want to weigh in on this? Okay, I see Jamie Baxter has his hand up. Please, Jamie, come in.
Yes, Jamie Baxter for the transcript. I thought one of the ideas that we had talked about some while back now was to reach out to some of the, specifically the community applicants who had dropped out of the process a long time ago to really understand what their challenges, specifically reaching out because they're not part of this circle anymore, but yet there's still a lot of incredibly important things to be learned from their experience. I'm not sure if we did that or not. I don't recall reading any feedback or input or plan to do that sort of an outreach, but considering very few of the community applicants actually got through the process, it might be interesting to get some perspective from those who were not successful to understand the challenges that they encountered.
Yeah, thanks for that. We did get some feedback from some community applicants, but not nearly enough. And I think there's been a little bit of reticence from some because they're participating in the sort of the evaluation process of the CEP and how that went. And, you know, I think a lot of us are waiting for some feedback from that as well. So I do take your point, and you know, as I said, we did have a good bit of feedback from applicants, but we certainly would benefit from much more. Okay, anybody else have anything on our schedule here between now and March? Buckle up. Okay. All right, well then let's go forward in the agenda. Okay, so into the meat of the discussion today, continuing our discussion on community applications, and in particular, the concept of creating categories of communities. And this was something that was brought up in the discussion in Abu Dhabi with the GAC, and I believe it was Thomas Schneider who had some thoughts on this. So we sent around the transcript of that discussion earlier yesterday, but if folks want to take a look at it now, and in particular I'm talking about pages 20 through 22, just to get a sense of what Thomas was suggesting with respect to creating categories of communities, and it looks like there's a number of ways to think about this. It could be broken down, say some are brands or some are geonames, or even dividing things up with commercial or non-commercial or public interest oriented or based upon languages, based upon cultures, these kinds of categories to be created, and then figuring out what are the appropriate types of privileges for that particular category of a community. So there seemed to be some interest in this suggestion, and we thought it might be a way to sort of get some movement, some progress going forward on, you know, sort of nailing down what do we want to do with communities. And so we thought we'd bring this back to the group this time and see what thoughts participants had on trying to create different categories for communities. Since right now we've got sort of a one-size-fits-all. If you're a community, you get objection rights and privileged access going forward. And is that appropriate for every type of community? Are there other things that would be more appropriate? So, you know, really this is our chance to think about how we could shape the concept of communities by creating categories if appropriate. So let me just open it up to the floor and see what others have to say on this suggestion. Thanks. Yes, I see Alan's got his hand up. Please, Alan, go ahead.
I hate to be the only one to raise hands. My only comment is I think Thomas's comments have you know, a lot of merit, and it's an example of the kind of things I was talking about before, that there are people with ideas and strong feelings out there, and when they get introduced, it's going to make us a lot harder to come to closure. But somehow I think we need to be investigating them. And, you know, we cannot just say, and I'm not accusing you of doing that, but I suspect some might think that by raising it here and you asking, does anyone have any thoughts on it, and no one raises their hand, it's, you know, we shelve it and it's gone. And I don't think the world is going to be that easy. So I'm not sure how to proceed, but somehow we have to get substantive discussion on these things, and that's more than is happening right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Well, maybe if we just throw out a few sort of straw bunny ideas and we say, okay, let's break it down and we say we've got a category, we create a category that's for businesses or for commercial enterprises in some fashion, profit-motivated groups in some fashion, and then we have another category for not-for-profit or non-commercial public interest-oriented categories of communities, and, you know, sort of start off with that as a differentiating point, whereas you could say, okay, so we've got a community of banks, and they would go in the commercial category, and then maybe we've got a group of indigenous people, and they would go in the second category, the non-commercial category. So that could be one possible way to sort of get started thinking about different kinds of categories. Anyone have any thoughts on that or other suggestions about how to move forward? Okay, I see Anne's got her hand up. Please, Anne, go ahead.
Thanks. It's Anne for the transcript. I have a little bit of concern if the category relates to just the sort of the nature of the applicant. On the subject of indigenous peoples, you know, our firm represents a number of tribes. And I think it depends not necessarily on the nature of the tribal entity per se, but the purpose of the TLD, you know, could potentially be a different category, because tribes have a kind of a hard time making a living. They more or less, I mean, in the U.S., they more or less got stuck with gambling, some other activities. They're always, you know, exploring new ways to cooperate with one another, you know, solar energy, other things. And so I don't know that we can stick a category by whether the entity is, you know, by what type of entity it is in the application. I think if we wanted to create such a category, it might more be tied to the purpose. And that just is one perspective from the standpoint of Native American tribes. That may confuse the issue, but it's the reality. Thanks.
Thanks, Anne. And I actually think that's really helpful to, you know, to think about this in terms of what is the purpose as opposed to sort of the nature of the applicant. I don't think that actually confuses things. I think it allows for, you know, like language groups or language communities or different regions of the world to sort of form communities, if you will, under this type of a regime. Okay, I see Jamie Baxter has his hand up. Please, Jamie, go ahead.
Thanks, Jamie Baxter, for the transcript. I think I agree with Anne there, and I think she may be touching on something that should be explored a little bit further. The observation that I'll share is that based on the applicant guidebook, when communities applied, it really did seem a little bit more welcoming to types of communities without really strong restrictions on what that would look like. However, when the EIU created their own guidelines, it seemed as though because a majority of the applicants were lined up a little bit differently perhaps than our application was for .gay, it seemed as though things got skewed a little bit more along how do we deal with sort of an industry approach to communities. And had that not happened, I think the results probably would have been a little bit different. That's my personal opinion. But I think what Anne is suggesting is something that should be explored, because based on the nature of the domain, going back to the original guidebook description of who could qualify for community or who what community was to encompass, the way they were evaluated really sort of seemed to skew towards a different direction than being all-inclusive. So, again, that's my perspective, it's my opinion, but I think it's something that should be explored a little bit more, and I don't know what the right answer is.
Thanks very much. I see Anne's got her hand up again. Please, Anne.
Yes, thanks, Robin. It's Anne again for the transcript. Even though I made the comment about the purpose of the TLD, I think the potential complication there is a tendency that if such categories were created, it might put, you know, ICANN in the content judging business with respect to, well, what is, and this is in relation to First Amendment concerns, is, you know, what's the purpose of your TLD, and do we think that's good enough to, you know, be in a special category or not? Yeah, you know, maybe it's not, you know, more so than was already created by 2012, but I do think we have to be careful about that freedom of association question if we're going to create categories. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. And I think you've touched on another point that Thomas made in his remarks, which is that, you know, who gets to decide who's a member of a community? Is it ICANN that decides? Is it the community that decides? Is it the evaluators that decide? It is a bit of a thorny issue. But I see we've got a queue going here. First, Jeff, and then Tahani. Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. Sorry, I had a call out so I could speak. So I just want to get back to what, so it seemed like, and this was pointed out earlier, I think what Thomas was really getting at was when the GAC was discussing the concept of communities, they were more discussing it in terms of geographic type of communities or cultural communities. And what we seem to have more applications of in the last round were industry-based communities. So those that are applying for .hotel as a community or .sport as a community or .music as a community, which is more kind of industry-based or commercially oriented. Whereas when they were envisioning it, it was, they would like to see more of, you know, common language communities or social economic communities. And so the basic point that I think we should discuss is, should we distinguish between these types of communities? And I think what Thomas was getting at least while I was listening, was that perhaps certain requirements should be more stringent for those that are seeking community applications based on a cultural, socioeconomic or geographic community as opposed to an industry-based community like those seeking for hotel or accountant or any other kind of industry-based ones. And I think we should discuss within the group, does that produce a desirable result? And if we do think that that produces a desirable result, then we would have to go in and determine how we figure out which type of community would be deserving of such of differential treatment. But thanks. I just want to add that.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Tahani, please go ahead. Tahani, I don't hear you. Are you speaking?
Hello.
Okay, there I heard you. Go ahead, please. Please go ahead. Thank you.
I don't hear anything. Okay, thank you. Jane speaking. I will not repeat what was said. But I don't think that we can treat all the communities in the same way, especially the difference between industrial or commercial communities by opposition to the communities such as cultural community, language community, etc. So making categories is, I think, is an important point that will help perhaps in the future give a proposal or recommendation on how we have to treat them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tahani. Next in the queue, we have Anne. Please.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. It's Anne. This relates to Jeff's comment, and I guess tends to agree a little bit with the most recent comment. I'll give the example of solar energy being an industry. As previously noted, there are a number of tribes evaluating generation of solar energy as an income resource. And so, for example, if they, you know, decide they're going to cooperate together to create a TLD that would, you know, assist with promoting this effort in this industry, you know, there might be very good public policy reasons to classify that solar energy industry in this collaboration among tribes as a community application. So I end up thinking, wow, this, you know, it's got to be a case-by-case basis analysis, but how do you do that without getting into content analysis is a big challenge. I don't think it can be divided based on whether it's industry-oriented or not industry-oriented. That was my point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anne. And Jeff is next. Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks. I'll just bring up what I just put in the chat because I think it was good. And I know John Nevitt's on the call here. One thing that John said that stuck out with me is the concept of, you know, we're not trying to make it difficult for communities to apply. We like communities. We want to encourage communities, but that doesn't necessarily mean that a community should be able to apply for a very generic type of string and then, you know, get more favorable treatment because it is, you know, economically disadvantaged or in some other way not able to participate in an auction or doesn't have the financial resources. I think what happened in this past round is that communities came together and applied for the most generic type of string that they could, presumably because it was more marketable. Presumably they could sell it easier, I guess, within the community. But you know, there was nothing stopping some of those from applying for other strings as communities that didn't incorporate such generic terms. And, you know, I think the example that John raised, and maybe he can step in if I'm misquoting, but I think the example he gave was there's nothing stopping the American Bar Association, let's say, from applying for ABA, because that's their initials as a community. But, you know, when they apply for something then, like .law, then they're applying for a string that's much more generic in nature and not necessarily tied to only the community which they seek to represent. And so, but in this last round, we had organizations apply for, you know, the most generic of strings as opposed to perhaps something that might more resemble their community. I thought that was an interesting point. I don't know if John wants to expand on it. I don't know if I did a decent job explaining that, but perhaps something that we could discuss. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. That is an interesting point, that maybe one of the problems from the last round and a way to fix it is to make sure that or to discourage community applicants from sort of overreaching and applying for such a large piece of real estate that it's you know, going to fence off other legitimate users of that term as well. Did anyone else have any thoughts on that or other ideas about categories of communities? I mean, I think when we think about communities and when we created this concept, we should be asking ourselves, you know, what is it that's special here that we feel needs a leg up, that we want to either ease the restrictions or otherwise differentiate in criteria or some other means to privilege, if you will, one applicant over another? And, you know, I think if we think about it from that standpoint, we can say, well, it's because of, you know, the community share the following qualities, and that's what we want to privilege. So I don't know if anyone has any thoughts on that. Okay, I see Donna's got her hand up. Please, Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, Robin. Donna Austin. To some extent in my mind, this conversation is not dissimilar from the one about applicant support, because I think one aspect of it is, you know, distinguishing between the haves and the have-not, the have-nots, which is a poor way to say it, but that seems to be what we're trying to do here, is to find exceptions for those that are not as well resourced as others to go through the process. And some of the, you know, community applicants that might have some kind of tie to a culturally sensitive name or something like that may not have the resources of somebody who also wants that string for other reasons. So I think there's a connection here between the conversation around, you know, developing community categories and also the conversation about applicant support and trying to find, you know, what that criteria might look like. Because I think, to me, there seems to be a connection, because if I read the transcript correctly about what Thomas is trying to get to, it's that, you know, the applicants that are not, that don't have the resources to compete with others in an auction situation, then we must find a way to support them in some way. And I think that's why the community priority evaluation was brought into play in the first place. So I think there's a few different conversations we could be having here, and one of them is the criteria for applicant support. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Donna. I do agree. I think that there is a connection between applicant support and community applications, and we may want to have as a recommendation that underprivileged community applications be provided some kind of applicant support. That seems like, you know, a perfectly reasonable recommendation should this group choose to make that. I don't know. But I think you're right. There is somewhat of a connection there. Okay, I see Jess in the queue. Jess, please go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that in part. I also disagree a little bit with that as well, that it's not only about, you know, giving, you know, helping those that may not have the resources, but it's also about kind of a feeling of doing, I guess if Thomas Snyder were here or members of the GAC, they would say it's about ensuring that parties that we think or the public believes should have a TLD gets that resource. It's almost like it's not that necessarily a financial aspect, but you know, just a feeling that, look, if you can get a bunch of groups together in a common cause and that will really do something positive for the public interest, then giving them exclusive control over a top level as opposed to another applicant that's purely financially oriented just seems like something to do, something more beneficial and in the public interest. It's not necessarily that they don't have financial resources to run a TLD. They may not have the most financial resources to win an auction, which is different than applicant support, much different. But I think that, you know, it really stems from the fact that, you know, early on, we kind of had to, if you look at it as a pendulum, when we had the first round of sponsored TLDs in 2005, we kind of had a process where we created criteria to be a sponsored community. At the end of the day, what actually ended up happening, if you talk to the people from around then, is that nobody met the criteria initially from the independent evaluators, and then ICANN staff kind of changed that so that everybody met the criteria or nobody was disqualified. And then so we had basically all of the applicants, with the exception of one, I think they're a .tel or .phone or something, didn't meet it. Other than that, everybody else met it. And so the pendulum swung all the way to try to fit every application into a sponsored TLD so that they could all get the top-level domains. And so it was incredibly easy to become a sponsored community, if you will, to now having the pendulum swing completely the opposite way, a lot of people would argue, and that it became so difficult for anyone to it became so difficult that very few were able to achieve community status. So I think one of our jobs is to try to swing the pendulum back towards more of a balance which honors the original principle that the GNSO had, which is that there should be a preference for, I'm doing a bad job rewording it, however that recommendation was worded, but there should be some sort of priority for communities. So I think that we should be working towards that, since that is currently the policy of the GNSO, unless we all decide we want to change it. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Anne, you're next in the queue. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Robin. It's Anne. The policy of the GNSO, as I understand it, is that community should be interpreted broadly and will include, for example, an economic sector, a cultural community, or a linguistic community. I think what we're talking about here is potentially changing that policy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it can be changing it. It can also be, you know, defining it a little bit more clearly.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. It's Anne. I just, when we say that the current policy does state that a community includes an economic sector, we'd have to go back to the original reasons for that. I guess what I'm struggling with mostly is that these community applications did not have a very high rate of success. And now what we're talking about doing is creating more limitations on how community applications can qualify. But we didn't have a good success rate in 2012 with, you know, promoting community applications.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. I see Alan is next in the queue. Please, Alan, come in.
Thank you. I suspect we may well end up changing some of the exact words. You know, I have trouble, for instance, using a financial community in the same context as I use some of the other communities we're talking about, linguistic or cultural. You know, if we go away from the technical terms, you know, what do we mean by community? At some level, from my perspective anyway, it's used almost in the same context as family. You know, it's a warm, fuzzy feeling that you're with people who think alike, or who have similar interests, and not in a purely business sense. And if that is indeed what we're talking about, then I think we need to craft words that allow those kind of applicants to succeed. And, you know, I suspect that was the original intent. I wasn't around at the time of the original sponsored TLDs, or even at the very beginning of the discussion within the GNSO. But my sense is we were looking for something that maps onto the bylaws words of public interest and, you know, serving the communities that are using the Internet and not just as from a business perspective. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. I don't see any other hands. Anybody else want to weigh in on categories of communities?
Hi, this is Gigi Levine. I'm on audio only. Can I have
You're in the queue and you're next. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks. Again, Gigi Levine for the record. Am I oversimplifying it to say that if it's a community, if it's, you know, an international group representing several organizations that is specific to a common interest, even if it is an economic interest, wouldn't that take priority over a single individual applicant? It just seems very intuitive to me that, you know, if you've got a group of international organizations with interest in a specific string, that would outweigh the interest of one individual applicant. Just wondering what the group's thoughts are on that.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I think under the existing rules that the group of international organizations would have precedence over a single individual. That individual wouldn't be able to qualify as a commune in order to get that kind of preference. That's my understanding. Anyone can correct me, please, if I'm wrong.
Right. So I guess I'm saying that it does make sense to have that priority evaluation for the community, and that I don't see a distinction between an economic, a business kind of community versus a linguistic community.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Next in the queue we have Tahani. Please go.
Thank you very much, Tijani speaking. We didn't say that the community of business, for example, will not be considered, but we cannot, in my point of view, put on the same the community of business as a community of as you said, language linguistic community. There is a big difference between both. Why we have to consider a business community? Because when an individual is applying for a string, I don't think that the priority will go to the individual if a community of business apply for it also. So there is the community of business is also considered, but that's why we need categories of communities. Thank you.
Thanks, Tahani. And yeah, that's an interesting thought, is maybe we should think about this from the standpoint of the different needs of the different types of communities. So we could ask ourselves, what does a business community need, and try to send recommendations that would help that business communities, and likewise say, well, what does the non-industry communities need, and try to fashion a set of recommendations that are tailored towards the needs of that community. Because, you know, we can, you know, we get to sort of design this, or at least make recommendations to redesign this. And so I think, you know, asking ourselves these kinds of questions would help us to come to the to the answers that we want down the line. Okay, I see Anne has her hand up. Please, Anne, come in.
Yes, thanks, Robin and Dan. I noticed, you know, further down in the GAC transcript, you have the representative from Switzerland mentioning the GAC support of the Council of Europe report. And so I think it's worth our, you know, reading that portion of that report that applies to the definition of community. One of the reasons to do that is a practical reason, because it's kind of a hint about, you know, where GAC advice could be going. But other than that, it's just a somewhat useful reference to definitions, because the Council of Europe based its definition of what it considers to be a community on the use of the word association, formulated, you know, within UN principles. So it's just a suggestion that it's not a great idea to ignore what the Council of Europe report says about the definition of community. Especially because that there's a comment there from Jorge Cancio about the GAC support of the Council of Europe report. So I think they
thanks, Anne.
To,
yes,
to,
and
to look, the first, look at their definition.
Thanks very much, Anne. And yes, the first time we went over the topic of communities a few months back, we did have the Council of Europe on our call to go over that with us, and it is, you know, still part of our curriculum, if you will, and one of the materials that we're looking at. So thanks for that reminder. I see Jeff is next in the queue. Jeff, please.
Yeah, thanks. Just say I agree that we should be looking at that report, but I did ask, I think it was during the session, things are blending together, but I believe I asked that the GAC to, because the GAC hasn't supported the report, it just acknowledged receiving the report and may have discussed the report. One of the things I asked of the GAC at that session was that over the next several months, if they could actually go through the report and let us know which recommendations in that report they supported and which they there may not be support for, because there were a number of recommendations in there, some of which were not so controversial, but others that I'm not necessarily sure that the GAC as a whole would necessarily endorse. There were, for example, recommendations that you know, rather than taking applications, complete applications for strings and then evaluating them, what we should be doing is taking in an application, putting those applications, at least the strings, out there for a period of 30 days or more to see if anyone else wanted to apply for that same string, and then take all the applications, and if there's a community that applies to that string, then that community would get preference. Otherwise, it would be the first one to apply that met the other criteria. So there were some pretty radical proposals in there, and there were some not so radical proposals. And so I did ask the GAC that it would be great if they could be more specific as to which of the recommendations they were supporting within that report, as opposed to just generally referring that report to us. And I think Mark Carvel from the UK had agreed to take that action item back and see what could be done. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Next in the queue is Alan. Alan, please come
in. Thank you. I just was going to say what Jeff just said. Mark Carvel is working on a draft paper on community applications, which I presume, if it goes to completion, will become a GAC paper and will be fed into this process. So I do think that is indeed going forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Anyone else want to weigh in on the issue of categories for community applicants? What do folks think about not trying to have communities be this one-size-fits-all approach where if you're a community, then you all have the same privileges or rights as the other quote-unquote communities? That's the way we currently have it. And what about tailoring it to something a little bit more focused on the type of community and the needs of the community and what we're trying to promote or privilege in this process? Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Or do we like the one-size-fits-all approach for as long as you're considered a community, you get the community privileges? Well, I don't hear or see anyone. Here we go. We've got Anne. Anne, please come in.
Yeah, thank you, Robin and Sam. Just very quickly, going back to Donna's comment about some of the applicant support issues and then this whole question of definition of community, I think it may be more appropriate for ICANN to enter the sort of, you know, do you have a good purpose or not in relation to applicant support where there's, you know, this ICANN money involved. I don't think personally that with respect to community and the definition of community, that is a good place for ICANN to become an arbiter of the, you know, content to be promoted or in the TLD. So I would distinguish between the two in that manner. I think, you know, evaluating for applicant support necessarily involves, you know, that kind of exercise of judgment. I don't think community, again, I feel it's related to a freedom of association and that it's community should not be subject to that, you know, assessment. And I think that's really what the policy and currently states in the AGB is that there is no content judgment on community applications.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I think, you know, the way the AGP generally comes out now is that, you know, if you're a group of groups or if you're a group of individuals, that's pretty much a community. And there wasn't enough sort of vision put around that in terms of trying to give guidance and clarity to the evaluators as to what should be considered a community and what shouldn't be considered a community when we came up with these recommendations to begin with. So I worry that, you know, trying to take too much of a hands-off approach is really what got us into this mess in the first place, that of, you know, no clear definition and conflicting decisions coming from panels. And so we might just have to make some hard judgments here and to try to at least improve upon the problems that we've had in the last round. I don't know. That's just a thought trying to throw out there to get some feedback from others. Anybody want to weigh in? We've got about 3 minutes left on the call, so final remarks. Here's your chance. Okay, well, I do not see any hands or hear any voices. So I think what we should do is, rather than spending a minute and a half on the community comment, let's wrap up here and we can come back to the community comment next time. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this approach? Any other final thoughts for the day? Any other business? Thank you. Okay, well, not seeing or hearing any other comments, let me wrap this up for today, and we'll be back on in 2 weeks from now. And thank you all for participating. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Robin. Great call.
Thank you.